celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Welcome back. David Clark in for Earl Ingram, 4:04 p.m. It's getting to be quitting time for a number of people. And we're talking about education, different aspects of it. I said this wouldn't be an hour of bashing MPS. We need solutions here. We're talking about the role that parental involvement, the role that it plays in the lives of our young people as it relates to education. And we're talking about this aspect. It's a it creates peer pressure among especially young black students that education is a white thing, and how we get over that, how we convince our young people, no, it's not. They don't have the market cornered on this. You can succeed. You will succeed. You expect it to succeed. You have the ability. And to help them get through that, because oftentimes, as I indicated earlier, young people will, you know, make decisions that are questionable, and in terms of peer pressure and group acceptance being more important than something like excelling in school. And so I thought it'd be a great idea to have a gentleman come on with me and share some of his experiences in that, along those same lines. I read his book. I was fascinated by it, inspired by it. When this topic came up, I thought, wow, let's see if we can get him on to share some of his experiences around this same thing. And he's the author of the book, He Talked Like a White Boy. His name is Joseph Phillips. And I want to read quickly from the jacket cover. Give us a little insight into this book, and then we'll welcome him and get his insights. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town, and the flap reads like this. I've grown tired of the one-dimensional portrayal of black life in our cultural discourse, the pessimism, the nihilism, and hedonism. I have grown frustrated by the limits imposed on black individuality by white liberals, and I have grown impatient with the limits that are just as often imposed by the black community. It seems an obvious notion that if you don't tell your own story, someone else will tell it for you, and you may not be happy with what they have to say. Quiet as it's kept, black people like me exist, and I grow more convinced every day that more and more black people share my thoughts on a great number of subjects. They share my belief in the dynamism and vitality of the black community, and my belief that this is a great nation, not because of the good things we have, but because of the good things we believe. Although I like to make speeches, I'm not a politician, nor am I an academic. I'm a husband, a father of three boys, and a man who loves to cook, and a man who loves Western movies. I'm an actor who's had a whiff of celebrity and liked the way it smelled, and I'm a black man whose politics tend toward the conservative, and who, much to my wife's dismay, happens to have an opinion on just about everything. Welcome to my world. As a young student, Joseph Phillips once overheard someone say to him, he talked like a white boy. The Denver native never thought that speaking correctly would cause others to question his authenticity as an African American. Little did he know what lay in his future. His choices in music, politics, faith, and family had given rise to many accusations of his not being black enough. As an actor, Joseph encountered even more pointing fingers this time for not being liberal enough for Hollywood. With a frank voice and a loving heart, this brilliant conservative and outspoken African-American man presents a series of funny and thought-provoking essays that speak to the simple fact that authenticity is far more complicated than one's choice of words and music. Joseph C. Phillips is an actor, a writer, lecturer, and social commentator, best known for his role on The Cosby Show as the character Denise's Lisa Bonet's husband, Lieutenant Martin Kendall. He has also appeared in such films as Strictly Business, Midnight Blue, and Let's Talk About Sex. As a writer and social commentator, Joseph has appeared in Newsweek, Los Angeles Daily News, Essence Magazine, Upscale, and the USA Today. His weekly column, The Way I See It, appears in newspapers around the country. He was also a regular contributor to NPR, National Public Radio's Travis Smiley radio show. He lives in Los Angeles with his wife and three children. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Sheriff. I should just let you keep reading. That was...
You know, it's really a privilege and a pleasure to speak to you and to have you on to join us today. As I indicated, I came across the title to your book. I was reading an article somewhere else and was talking about the black experience in America and some of the many dimensions of it. And it mentioned your title, and I said, you know, that's something I think I'd like to read. So I picked it up and read it. Fascinating work. I guess I want to start by asking you, what inspired you to write this book?
It was actually a challenge from Tavis Smiley. I was having a conversation with Tavis, and he challenged me to write the book. And he didn't realize who he was talking to, I guess, because about 3 months later, I delivered the manuscript onto his desk. And that was really the beginning of it. The book went through many changes from that moment, but that was the motivation. And once I found a publisher for the book, then we began to put the story into the book, and it developed an arc. And I kind of went at it, I guess, backwards, because it was after the first challenge that I began to think, well, what is it that I am trying to say? What do I want to do with the book besides just say that I have published a book? And that's when I began to really think about trying to be a bridge. Maybe that's not the right analogy, but to begin or to energize, participate in a growing conversation and move our family dialogue and national dialogue to some higher ground where we stop talking about racial categories, and begin talking about the things that really bind us together as people, the things that make us authentic. And I think that those things really are our principles, those things that we live our lives by. And in my opinion, the first and foremost is family, faith, and idealism. And those were the things that I wanted to talk about in my book.
1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town, Sheriff David Clark with author Joseph Phillips. And we're talking a little bit about the black experience in America. Joseph, we led off with the education issue, which is which is front and center here in the city of Milwaukee.
As it is, I think, in
many
in
urban
most
centers
places.
Across America. You're right. They're talking about a governance change and having the mayor take over the school system. But there's another angle to this in terms of black achievement. How do we close the achievement gap? How do we get our young students to excel? And there's this aspect that education is a white thing among some, black youth. And it's pressure on other black youths who understand the importance of education. They want to excel. They have the ability. But yet they make the decision that group acceptance is more important. You know, they're going through adolescence. That's age-appropriate behavior. But you had some of those experiences as well, and why don't you share some of them with us as a kid growing up?
You know, what I'd like to address a couple of things that you've been talking about. This idea that education is white, you know, that we begin to use some of these things that we discuss in fun, and they become cultural currency that we trade upon, that's the danger. And so this idea that education is for white people becomes prevalent. And it's not exclusively in the black community, this anti-intellectualism. It really is an American cultural problem. But as it pertains to black people, the thing that I find so fascinating is that it's really new school thinking. This is not old school thinking, and I tend to be old school. When you look into our past as a people here on these shores and you recognize what black people used to do in order to gain an education, then you understand the importance that education has always played in our communities. People always talk about the father, grandfather who worked, who was uneducated, but was going to make sure that the next generation got that golden chalice that was denied them. That's the importance of education traditionally in our community. So this idea that reading, writing, being academically excellent is for white folks is completely new school. there was a time when the people that that we hung on our walls in the barbershops and in our homes were people like Langston Hughes, Zora Neale Hurston, Paul Robeson. These were intellectuals. We didn't celebrate, you know, pop stars, people with very little to say. We were celebrating people who were writing very deeply, not just about the black experience, but about the human experience. So that's our legacy. The other thing that I find fascinating is we are constantly talking to kids about peer pressure. Oh, we understand kids have peer pressure. Well, peer pressure works both ways, because there are also kids that are doing the right things in school. So to say that I was pressured to do the wrong thing is really to say I ignored the pressure that I got from the kids who were doing the right thing, and I chose to walk in lockstep with the kids that were getting in trouble. So I'm not a real believer in this idea that kids are influenced by peer pressure, because there's peer pressure on both sides. You know, the other thing, finally, the point you were talking about, the achievement gap, is that once and for all, we have got to face the fact that many of the issues that we face in our homes and our communities have a genesis in the marriage gap. And when you talk about kids succeeding and failing in school, you can go back and trace and almost identify which kids come from two-parent households and which kids do not. And when you see that 70% of our kids are in single-parent, female head of household homes, and that other communities it is much less, then I think that you begin to see some of the solutions to our problems lie right there.
You know, I agree, and you say it better than I could, which is why I wanted you to join us today. This is Sheriff Clark, 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town. I'm joined by author Joseph Phillips, and we're talking about black authenticity. He wrote a book, and that book is entitled He Talked Like a White Boy, and it's Reflections on Faith, Family, Politics, and Authenticity. We started out with education, and there's a nexus to all of this stuff, and you know how the family, the role of the family plays, the role that peer pressure, and I like the way you said, you know, we're given choices, and you know, when young people, and anybody really for that matter of fact, makes a decision, it's usually from among several decisions that they can make. But you also talk about in your book the role that your father played in your life. You saw your father as your hero, and you talked about how your father, you know, raised four kids and didn't have the you know, what we would perceive to be the ideal situation, but he you know, he would grind it out and do everything he could to keep your family together, to feed you and give you opportunities and talk to you. He was fully engaged in that.
Well, yes and no. I think I say some other things. I think like most men, I had a complicated relationship with my father. Well, I shouldn't say most men. I should say like a lot of men I know. I had a complicated relationship with my father, and I hope that my sons do not experience the same types of complications with me as I did with my father. But there was a lot that I learned from my father in spite of all of his faults. And I think that that's the fact that he was a flawed human being was something that it was difficult for me to come to terms with. Not that I expected him to be perfect, but to come to grips with the fact that he was flawed and that he did, in many ways, he did the best that he could do, and sometimes it wasn't good enough, but he was trying. My father got up every day of his life and went to work. He set, I think, a good example of manhood, and he was involved in the community. And as I say, he wasn't a perfect human being.
Well, none of us are.
Exactly. And, you know, I am always quick to let people know when I talk about family, when I talk about all of this, I have to acknowledge that my father was the product of a single parent, and that I am the product of divorce. divorced parents. So I, you know, I came to my marriage with all of that baggage, but I also know, having been the child of divorce, the impact that my father not being there, really only seeing my father on the weekends, had on me. And so I really am determined not to visit that on my sons. I have three boys. I lost track of I was going to make a larger point, but as I'm talking, I'm also thinking about the fact that I'm involved in my sons' lives, all three of their lives, much more than my father was involved with mine. I'm coaching youth football and taking people to lessons. I've been fortunate that my sons have been able to come to the set with me, and when I was on the radio, come to the radio station and really look and see a lot of what I do, and spending time with them, talking with them, and really developing a relationship with them. But the thing that I've discovered mostly through this involvement, once again, is the importance of the father in the home. There's so much anecdotal, there's so many anecdotes that I have to convey, just as being a youth football coach, and just how the boys behave and play differently when their fathers show up versus when their fathers don't show up. Men are not redundant, and I think it's a tragedy that we went so far in our society. I think some of it's changing, but we went so far one way in this idea that men just were not necessary in the home, that women could do it all, that the role of the father was simply that of a parent, not as a man, and my experience has been quite different.
You know, that's that's great stuff, and this aspect of the man in the home not needed. I mean, that's new stuff too. If you ask me, I think that it might not have started in the 60s, but it was something that was fueled in the 60s with the growth of big government and the our welfare society, and marriage was discouraged, and women who were on welfare, if you had a man in the home or you started up a relationship and they found out a man was in the home, you had your benefits cut. Those sorts of things were a disincentive to marriage as well. It is 422, 1290 WMCS, the Talk of the Town. Sheriff David Clark, and I'm joined by author Joseph Phillips, and we're talking about this issue of authenticity, what's really black. And he did write a book. He talked like a white boy, Reflections on Faith, Family, Politics, and Authenticity. And I want to switch up a little bit here. The book is a series of essays. It's a great read if you're interested in it. You and I can draw a parallel with you here in one of the essays. It's called Cowboy Up. And I just want to read a little bit from it and then have you respond to it. In great culture, cowboy, once a term of endearment, has now become one of contempt. Detractors label Presidents Ronald Reagan and George Bush as cowboys. The epithet was a comment on their plain language and what some described as a proclivity to shoot first and ask questions later. What they're missing is that the cowboys are heroes. Cowboys never look for trouble, but when it came to it, they faced it with courage. Cowboys are self-sufficient, independent, and honorable. Cowboys persevere in the face of overwhelming odds, and they respect women, children, and horses. They may often be men of few words, but more importantly, they are men of action. Tell us a little bit more about your admiration for the cowboy spirit, your love of Western movies.
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think of what to say after listening to that. Of course, that was written a few years ago, and in that essay, I tell a story of my eldest boy, who I think was in the third grade at the time,
right,
going to school dressed in Western garb, and I kind of became inspired by him. I went from being worried that he was going to be teased showing up in his boots and jeans and cowboy hat to deciding, well, I'm going to go put mine on too. But I'm a great lover of Western films. My wife doesn't quite get it, But we recently downgraded our DirecTV because we had a lot of channels we weren't watching, and we said, well, no sense in just throwing this money out the window. I said, you can take everything away except the Westerns channel. That's the only thing that I have to have. You can take ESPN. I'll catch that on the radio, but I have to have the Western channel.
And she went for that? Man, you got to tell me what your secret is, because I got some parallels with that sort of thing. And I'll tell you what, Joseph, we need to go to a break. Can you stick around?
Yeah, sure.
I'd really appreciate it if you want to get into this conversation. 799-1290, WMCS, the talk of the town.
Wearing your seatbelt has been shown to reduce injuries or death, but did you know that not wearing your seatbelt may cost you 15% of your recovery in an accident case? That legal tip was being brought to you by Samster, Conkle, and Safran. And make sure you log on to 1290WMCS.com to hear President Obama's weekly address. Save money at your favorite restaurants with our community deals and steals, and get updated on breaking news. Sign up for the 1290 VIP Club Card and more. It's the all-new 1290WMCS.com website. Go visit it.
Celebrating 30 years of broadcast excellence. Now back to the Evening Rush with Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town.
Sheriff Clark in for Earl Ingram on the Evening Rush, 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. I'm joined today by an author, by a writer, by an actor, and what he would tell you he's most proud of is that he's a husband and a father of three. He wrote a book. It's called He Talked Like a White Boy. It's about authenticity, politics, reflections on faith and family as well. And I'll tell you, before we went to the break, you were talking a little bit about this cowboy experience, and I told you how I can relate to that. And you also talked about the role that a father plays and that the role and how important that is to you. For your sons, or your kids, I should say. I don't know if they're all boys. And what I want to do now is go to the phone lines and welcome June. And June, you are joined by Sheriff Clark and Joseph Phillips. Your question or comment, please.
Good evening, Sheriff. Mr. Phillips, first of all, I want to ask let me say this. I agree with him about the Western, especially Louis L'Amour.
I can't hear anything.
Hello. I agree with you about the Western, especially Louis L'Amour, if you're familiar with him. An author, a book author.
Joseph, is he coming through?
No, I can't. I said,
I agree with you about the Western, especially Louis L'Amour, if you're familiar with the writer. Can you hear me?
I heard something about Louis L'Amour, but it's so far in the background. It sounds like maybe the button's not pushed or something. I don't know.
No, I got the button on right.
Okay, we seem to be having some technical difficulties with that caller. June, I'll tell you what. Why don't you call back on another line? Maybe we can get a better connection. But
right.
Joseph, what he was talking about, he was talking about. I agree with you on the your love of Western movies, but I think that his comment was going to be that he doesn't agree that you need to come from a two-parent home in order to be successful. I think I know what he means by that. I mean, that is true. However, you're kind of fighting the odds. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, listen, we all have heard stories and seen people interviewed on the news that have been smoking since they were 4 years old and didn't die of cancer. But at the same time, we put warning packages on cigarettes because we know that it's dangerous and it can lead to problems with your health. So this is not by any means an absolute, and I wouldn't ever venture to put a you know, in, and I say this in quotes, a death sentence on kids that are raised in single-parent homes. Again, my father was the product of a teenage pregnancy in the Depression. And he went on to become a successful pediatrician. So it certainly is possible. But what we also know that every single study tells us is that children raised in single-parent households tend to not do as well in school, tend to experiment with sex and drugs at an earlier age. We also know that they tend to lack health care. They tend not to be as healthy, tend not to be as happy, tend to be more depressed. We know that children also tend to not mirror their father's level of education, but their mother's level of education. So that if a young girl drops out of school to have a child, chances are greater that her children will also become dropouts or not attain as high a level of education, and will then also have children out of wedlock or will not get married. So we know all of these things to be true. And so what we're talking about is what we as a society should aspire to. There have always been, I think children, as I say, born out of wedlock in marriages that, you know, marriage is difficult, marriages fall apart. What I'm talking about is what we as a society, what we as a culture say is our ideal and what we all aspire to, and that is in contradistinction, I think, to what we've done culturally, to raise up the single mother as a hero and to say that, in fact, all households are equal. Doesn't matter what kind of household you come from, so long as there's love. And we know, again, the evidence says that that simply is not true. We can go down to the state pen in Wisconsin or any other state penitentiary, any other juvenile facility, and we will see that there are lots of boys there who have plenty of love and no fathers.
Very well said. 438, Sheriff Clark, with author Joseph Phillips, whose book is entitled He Talked Like a White Boy. It's about reflections on faith, family, politics, and authenticity. Joseph, can you stay through one more break?
Sure.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. 1290 WMCS, the talk of the town. Callers, please hang on if you want to get in and talk to Joseph Phillips. The number is 799-1290. Stay tuned.
Right now, you are most likely in your car, which means you're driving by things you see.
You know, what that means and some of your experiences that you met with when others, you know, heard you describe yourself as that, or they considered you that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I do not agree to being a conservative unless I get to define what that means, because that's one of those charged words that means different things to different people. And for some people, it means something that they scrape off the bottom of their shoe, or it means some kind of mental case. And I certainly don't agree or admit to being that. But what I do admit to is believing in the founding principles of this nation, to wit, that all men are created equal, and that the job of government is to protect and secure the God-given rights to life, liberty, and private property. I believe in limited but vigorous government. I believe in God. I believe in American exceptionalism abroad, and I believe in a capitalist market society. And I think that when you speak to most conservatives, that is a very general kind of description of conservatism or definition. And, you know, there are some conservative camps that believe in more of that than other camps, but I think that, generally speaking, that is the definition of conservatism, and that's where I would put myself.
Okay, that's very well said. And, you know, it's really been a pleasure. Like I said, I admire your writings, your positions on many things. The book is wonderful. There's some humorous aspects to it as well. It's a series of essays. Again, the book is He Talked Like a White Boy, Reflections on Faith, Family, Politics, and Authenticity. It's 4:44. You're listening to David Clark in for Earl Ingram on 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town. Joseph, we're going to let you go, and I want to thank you for joining us, and I'd like to have you back. I know that you speak on a variety of subjects, and you like to write, and like you said in the jacket cover, I have an opinion, and I'm going to enjoy wanting to hear from you from time to time. And also, you have a website. I want to get that out. It's www.josephphillips, and it's all one word. I'm sorry, Joseph C. Phillips. Right. www.josephcphillips.com if you want to learn more about Joseph Phillips and some of the things that he talks about, his positions. And again, I would advise the listening audience here that you get the book. And, you know, there's some things in there that, you know, will be uncomfortable to people, but that's all right. We all have different opinions and different positions. And I like to say, Joseph, that there are very few absolute truisms in life. There are just different schools of thought, different opinions. State your opinion, state the reasons why, and when people challenge it, strengthen your opinion and come back.
I agree with that. Just as a last quick story, that's one of the things that I say to my oldest boy all of the time, because he's in seventh grade now and he's having a lot of conversations and debates with his friends around issues of God and faith, and they're studying evolution, and his father is an outspoken conservative, and the kids know it, and so they've labeled him a conservative. And I said, listen, the day will come when you don't agree automatically with everything Daddy says. And that's fine. All I ask is that you be able to articulate your position and back it up with evidence. And if you do that, then that's all right with me.
Joseph, thanks again for joining us. And we'll see what happens down the road. But I'm going to try to get you back on the air.
All right. Thank you so much. And thanks to your audience.
Thank you. 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town. David Clark in for Earl Ingram on The Evening Rush. It is 4:46 p.m., and on the other side of the break, we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about how we prepare the city of Milwaukee for the 21st century, and it's going to be how we deal with the unemployment issue that the city of Milwaukee faces, the high rates of unemployment in general across the nation. I think it's 10.2%, 7 million people out of work, but it's even higher in our urban centers, our central city. And we're going to have a discussion on what Milwaukee needs to do to prepare this city for the industries of the 21st century so that we can put people back to work. And then after that, we're going to switch to the national scene. President Obama, big speech tonight, 7 p.m. Central, and he's going to lay out his plan for the war in Afghanistan. He's made a decision how he wants to proceed. He's the commander-in-chief. And we're going to go through some of the things that may be contained in that plan. And I want to get your thoughts on his plan, the way forward, if you will, in Afghanistan. Again, 1290 WMCS, The Talk of the Town. Stay tuned.
portion of the Evening Rush is being brought to you by Wendy's. And you know when it's real.